This AgriTalk podcast is brought to you by Syngenta, delivering better food for a better world through outstanding crop solutions.
Welcome to AgriTalk, everybody. Joe B filling in for Chip. All I've been told is that he's headed north for Christmas, and I've noticed that his beard is getting very, very long. Coincidence or no?
Live from Sparkle City, USA, via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This afternoon, we feature a conversation with Alan Brugler from Brugler Marketing. And actually, I've got some bad news about the Friday Farm Fuels and Fertilizer Report, but let's not start there. Let's start by bringing in our handsome guest host, in for the hunting Chip Flory, lollygagging Chip Flory, I don't know, the jury's out, Joe.
Good afternoon. Happy Friday. I'm happy to be here. Chip is, he's preparing the gifts for the children.
That must be what it is. Yes.
Well, the elves do that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I know that you would have been an elf. You would have been on the list, but you're too tall.
I'm very tall, extremely tall.
And extremely tall.
You know, they don't make cowboy boots that, you know, with a little curled toe like that.
Oh, yeah, they do. I've seen
And
them.
So, have you?
You know, ones they wear way down south that curl up, you know?
So, you're telling me that the fruits and nuts aren't just confined to California? They've made their way down to Nashville, Tennessee these days?
Yeah, I don't know about that. Maybe. There's a few around. Nashville's getting a little wacky. A lot of crazy people moving here.
Yeah.
Like
I hear.
Myself.
Yeah. Musicians and such.
Yeah, we had a nice week in the markets. I think corn, mm-hmm. beans, and wheat were all higher for the week, weren't they?
Yeah, absolutely.
Which, so that's a good thing.
It's a very good thing.
Won't complain about that.
It. Nope.
The stock market continues to rock and roll. New all-time highs again, mm-hmm. which has been like every day this week. It's pretty impressive stuff. Cattle market was kind of mixed today. We had a cattle on feed report. We'll talk about it. It may have had a slightly bearish tone to it. But okay. There's some other things going on in the cattle market as well. You want to get to the news here for the day, buddy?
Yeah, sure thing. Well, on the wheat side, after a lower open in the overnight, wheat futures tried to push higher in early trade today, but were unable to sustain much of a rally, and that triggered a round of selling. Still, HRW futures were able to buck the downside slide. This as USDA reported solid export sales of 868,000 metric tons last week, a marketing year high. But traders are keenly aware the world is very well supplied with wheat, fueling negative price sentiments. March hard red futures were 1.75 higher, 462.25. March soft red futures fell 3 cents to 542.25. March spring wheat was down 3.25 cents to 538 even. You know, you get some good news in the wheat market, but then, you know, there's got to be that smart aleck from the back row. Yeah, but there's still plenty of wheat in the world. Is that what we're looking at here, Joe?
I think part of what's going on has to do with the idea that China may buy some U.S. wheat. Mm-hmm. I think that's partially responsible. I also think that the lows that we posted back in September, I think we got awfully cheap there. I mean, your December contract in this Kansas City wheat got down into the 360s back in early September, and it's up into the 460s now. So you've had a dollar rally in Kansas City wheat, and it's really been, I would say, kind of a quiet, like under the radar type rally. So it's still acting really good.
All right, very good. Well, corn futures were slightly higher in today's trade, with back month contracts leading gains. Word from a Chinese consulting firm that China could indeed import more than $40 billion in U.S. ag goods added support. That analysis included corn and DDGs. Futures continued to consolidate today after the strong rebound posted on December 11. EPA's final rule on the RFS was a disappointment to corn growers and biofuel proponents, limiting bullish enthusiasm in futures today. March corn futures were a penny and a quarter higher, 387 and three quarters. May corn added a flat penny, 394. December 2020 corn closed at 401 and three quarters, up a penny and a quarter on the day. And we talked earlier in the week, Joe, and maybe you've heard more about this since, China perhaps even shopping for some U.S. ethanol.
I wouldn't be surprised at all if they bought ethanol. What I would be surprised by is if they actually bought $40 billion in ag products. So the piece of news that you mentioned was from a consulting group called JCI in China.
Correct.
They're fairly well followed. Yep. And essentially, I'm going to talk about these numbers during the show, but
good.
For now, I'm just going to call them ridiculous. But we'll talk later.
Okay, great. Well, soybean futures were mixed with deferred contracts fractionally lower. The bean market was also encouraged by the Chinese consulting firm's clarification of how China could get to $40 billion in ag purchases, or was it? The analysts suggested that China could buy around $18.7 billion, around 45 million metric tons of U.S. beans. While futures remain above several key moving averages, beneficial rains over the past 24 hours and more predicted for Argentina limited support in today's trade. January soybean futures 3¾ higher at 9.28¼. July beans added a half cent to 9.62½. Novi 2020 beans closed at 9.66¼, unchanged on the day. Joe.
The bean market's held up pretty well. We've had really not much of a setback here during this rally. I still think you've got large speculators, or we know that you have large speculators that are still short the market. And as long as there's a prospect of a trade deal and even the small possibility that soybean purchases are increased drastically, I don't know if they're real comfortable on the short side here.
Well, and what's kind of creepy about it too, and I don't want to steal your line of thought from later on in the show, but it just sort of occurred to me, we've talked an awful lot about amounts, as far as dollar mm-hmm. amounts, which I think is mm-hmm. ridiculous to begin with. You know, show me bushels, show me tonnages or something like that, rather than dollar amounts, which will slide with the market movements. But I'm missing out on the whole concept of time here. I mean,
right.
Of course, and, you know, they're going to buy a bajillion dollars worth of stuff over the next, you know, fill in the amount of years. Of course they will.
Well, I think the time frame that people are using is a 1 year basis. So I think this $40 billion is supposed to be over one calendar year, I think is the perception. But again, yes, this has been talk from the U.S. and pretty much silence from China in regard to any of these firm commitments. And supposedly, according to the Treasury Secretary, we will see the text of the deal sometime in early January.
Oh, terrific. Well, cattle futures were mixed with deferred contracts under pressure today. Pressure stemmed from lower wholesale beef prices and sluggish exports of late. But firmer cash bids limited pressure. The upcoming holiday shortened kill schedule did weigh on some futures, though. February cattle futures were 17.5 cents higher, 125.80. April cattle futures fell 2.5 cents to 126.72.5. January feeders fell 45 cents to 144.27.5. Did you say something about a bearish cattle report?
Cattle on feed report looked like this. All cattle on feed came in at 102%. That was on par with expectations. The bearish piece, if anything, would have been the placements, 105% versus expectations closer to 101. Mm. So if you had a bearish number here, it's the placements number as it usually is. Right. And the marketing's 97%. They were looking for 97.8. So maybe a slightly bearish tone, but there are some other things going on in the cattle. I think the perception with this China thing is that the protein sector is where you could really see a big jump in purchases. We've already seen it in pork. Could you see it in beef because they've got this African swine fever problem? I think that is part of what has been driving prices.
Yep. Well, lean hog futures were pressured by the premium futures hold of the cash market. Position evening ahead of Monday's quarterly hogs and pigs report also weighed on futures. As Reuters reports, traders surveyed expect a 3% increase in the size of the national herd. February hogs fell 30 cents, 70.67½. April hogs, steady, unchanged at 77.50. Varsity Joe.
All right, Joe V for Chip filling in on AgriTalk. We have Alan Brugler from Brugler Marketing coming up after the break. Happy Friday. We'll catch you then.
2019 marks 40 years of Syngenta and its legacy companies' work in seed treatment research and innovation. Ross Weichel, head of Syngenta Seed Care in North America, says a commitment to a robust pipeline is key to success for their customers. Ross joins us now. Hello, Ross. Tell me a little bit about that commitment to developing new solutions.
We've become one of the best innovators in the industry because of the resources we invest to keep our R&D engine humming. On average, we spend over 10 years and nearly $280 million to develop novel seed treatment molecules. Our current new product lineup and pipeline are truly tremendous.
Thanks, Ross. We'll hear more from Ross next week, but for more stories from Syngenta, head over to www.syngentathrive.com.
the mighty Prosaro, king of fungicides. Its fast action and long residual make it the keeper of grain quality and yield, the hammer of head and leaf diseases, the number one reducer of scab. When your goal is greater wheat quality and higher yield, use Prosaro fungicide, and the crown of higher profit will be yours. Learn more at prosaro.us. Always read and follow label instructions.
Calling all farmers and ag professionals, want to maximize return on investment for every acre on the farm? If so, now is the time to register for the Precision Ag Workshop at National Pheasant Fest and Quail Classic. Join me, AgriTalk's Chip Flory, to learn how precision ag data can boost bottom line profits and wildlife habitat. Enjoy farmer-led panel discussions and interactive breakout sessions. Register now at pheasantfest.org for the Precision Ag Workshop presented by John Deere on February 14th at the Minneapolis Convention Center.
Mr. Chairman, as a corn root, I speak for millions of my kind who can't be here to defend themselves. Pests are stalking our stocks and undermining our roots. Yes. But we can elect to protect with a legacy of strength. Poncho Votivo 2.0 seed treatment system increases nearby microbial activity to help us grow stronger. That's smart. Ladies and gentlemen, please, this is a corn roots movement. Ask your BASF seed advisor about Poncho Votivo 2.0 seed treatment. Always read and follow label directions.
Sometimes life is wonderful, and sometimes it's not. Cherish the good, but always be prepared for life's challenges. Private healthcare is private health insurance for ages 65 and under with medical, dental, vision, and even prescription coverage. If you're looking for health coverage at the best price and your annual household income is $35,000 or more, give us a call at 800-626-4910. That's 800-626-4910.
You can't see them, but they're coming for your soybeans. Pythium, Phytophthora, and soybean cyst nematodes are serious threats, and they require serious seed protection. Valent USA has developed a 1-2 punch defense so growers can take the next step in soybean protection. Intego Sweet Soybeans has four powerful modes of action against insects and diseases that work in tandem with Aveo Easy Nematicide to stop soybean pests and diseases before they strike. Find out more at soybeanprotection.com. Always read and follow label instructions.
This just in from the front lines of the fight against tough weeds in soybean fields. Growers have taken the next step with the ultimate secret weapon. Fierce brand herbicides from Valent USA. These pre-emergence herbicides protect soybean fields with multiple effective modes of action, residual control that lasts up to 8 weeks, and fierce resistance management to help you win the battle against resistant weeds and the war. Ask your retailer or visit valent.com/fierce to learn more. Always read and follow label instructions.
Get an early season win against weeds with Corvus for end of season rewards.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. Joe V, Standard Grain, filling in for Chip Claus today. If you want to get a hold of us, the best way is on Twitter, hashtag AgriTalk. You can tweet at me at Standard Grain. Follow me, tweet at me, whatever. Davis is on Twitter, I think.
I am.
He's on there sometimes.
Yeah, on occasion.
You got a cool cowboy hat in your picture still?
No. All I have are uncool pictures right now.
Unacceptable.
Sorry. It's
unacceptable.
I'll work on it over the Christmas weekend break. How's that? Yeah.
Work on it for me, buddy.
I will. I promise.
All right. We've got Alan Brugler, Brugler Marketing, on the show here today. Alan, how are you?
I'm pretty good.
All right. I want to kick it off with the wheat market here. Wheat market's been pretty good. Kansas City futures led the way today, but all in all, even the spring wheat market is trying to kind of dig itself out of a hole here. Does some of this have to do with the China rumors? Is it because of better exports? What is your take on that market right now?
Well, Minneapolis is pretty clear. Number one, that's the class of wheat that China historically has bought from the U.S. when it's buying wheat, is that spring wheat, sometimes a little white, but mostly spring. Mm-hmm. And the funds were record short in Minneapolis a week ago in the commitment of traders report. So that's a very thin market. It's very hard to get out of. So even a little bit of short covering gets you a pretty good rally there.
And they've still got to be short just a tremendous amount of wheat. I mean, if you look back at the historical positions of fund traders, they are over their skis short this thing right now compared to any other year.
Yeah, they're undoubtedly still short. We'll get commitment of traders data here in a little bit, but the in Minneapolis they're clearly short. Now Chicago's a different matter. Chicago's basically trying to play keep away here. We don't have enough SRW to do much more than handle domestic demand. You know, we like our cookies and our donuts, and that's we need to keep some of that SRW flour at home. So Chicago's keeping its premium to the other two, and you see it in the slow exports. But, again, we're doing a little price rationing that's keeping that one up.
The HRW market, I mean, I mentioned it's you know, the spot month futures a dollar off the lows from September, but it's continued to hold this big discount to that SRW market, which is not totally normal historically, but it's been that way for a while now. Do you expect anything to change in that spread?
Well, it will eventually. Right now, it's the difference in supply and demand. You've got SRW tight. You've got projected carryout for HRW 400 and some million bushels. You know, there's been years recently where production was only 700 million. So you're looking at a substantial carryover of HRW. The market's trying to get rid of it through the export market, and HRW has been the leading share lately of the in terms of what classes are going out of the country. But so the lower price for HRW is working. On a milling standpoint, yes, HRW should be higher than SRW, just the protein premiums and so forth. But until we redress this balance, then I think you've got to keep some kind of premium to Chicago. And the spec traders have died trying to fade that thing. That spread.
Now, the USDA told us in their most recent report, you know, U.S. ending stocks of wheat, they're going to fall to what, a five-year low, but you're still north of 900 million bushels. It's still very healthy. And then you look at the global situation, and you've got essentially a modern era high in stocks to use ratios and ending stocks, just flat ending stocks also. I mean, is there a ton of upside left in this deal when you've got that sort of situation on a global scale?
Well, it's challenging when you've got that big of a drag of supply. I think you have to look at who's got the grain and what's going on in their internal prices. Russia sold a big chunk of the exports that they have to sell. They're typically some of the lower offers out there. You've seen the FOB price for Russian wheat rally quite a bit here since September. You've got Argentina being complicated by the increase in the tariffs there, export taxes more properly. That makes it less attractive to grow wheat, and it pulled a lot of business ahead. They dumped a lot of their wheat early before the new taxes kicked in. So I think we're in a situation where the U.S. can continue to make some sales here. Australia's got a drought. They're not going to be flooding the market with wheat either. So your risk factor is primarily going to be the North American or Northern Hemisphere production, and that's not till June and July. So, again, I think there's a cap there. I don't know if it's $5 or $6, but you've got and I'm talking Chicago there, but we're not necessarily there yet. I think the other question is, what does corn do?
Mm-hmm. How much of and we're going to talk about this in relation to the soybean market later, but as far as this trade situation goes, I mean, is there a bunch of premium built into this wheat on the idea that China's going to buy some, or do you think that that's not necessarily that big of a deal?
I don't think we've built a lot of premium in. I think there's it's driving some of the short covering in Kansas City and Minneapolis, and you've got better exports anyway to the other countries. So I don't think there's a huge premium where if the deal blew up, the wheat's suddenly going to collapse. If it does, it'll be because corn and beans are going down too.
The value of the dollar's backed off a little bit. We've lost a couple percentage points here in the dollar index over the last several weeks, and that's typically a positive factor for the wheat market. Do you have any opinion on the direction of the dollar or any of these currency pairs in their ties to the wheat market?
Well, of course, the dollar index is a function of interest rates. It's also a function of trade balances to a degree. The interest rates, the Fed has kind of said we're not going to change rates anytime soon. We're not going to lower them. That's actually perversely should be stronger, should be helpful to the dollar. But the other thing you have to remember is what's the dollar done for the year? Because we are coming into year end now. And a lot of times the trade's going to fade whatever they did for the rest of the year. And you go back and look, the dollar index was around 95 at the beginning of the year. Right now it's 97 and got as high as 99. So you're seeing a little bit of selling in the dollar, I think, just because of the move during the calendar year.
To shift gears here real quick before the break, I wanted to talk about the ethanol situation and this biofuel deal. So it sounds like the corn lobby, Chuck Grassley, they're not happy with this EPA decision, which essentially is going to leave the blending requirements just up to the Department of Energy's discretion and EPA's discretion. Is ethanol headed in the wrong direction now? I know the margins have slid a little bit here the last week or two.
Well, ethanol, the items you mentioned are not helpful to ethanol, but I think the flip side of that is one of the things China probably is going to buy is ethanol. They have a blend mandate there for 2020 that they're not able to meet through domestic production, don't have enough ethanol plants built, and enough corn supply to feed it. So I think the offset might be the foreign demand for ethanol makes up for whatever we're not required to use domestically.
So aside from soybeans, I mean, what products are your candidates for big increases in Chinese purchases? I mean, ethanol would be one because they're going to go from zero to something probably. Are you looking at the proteins? Are you looking at the other grains?
I think they're going to buy a lot of different things simply because they don't like to be the market. Okay. Mm-hmm. When any market that they're moving the price of, they tend to want to back out of as quickly as they can. We've seen that over time, rotation year to year and what they're buying from us, soybeans being the notable exception. I think beans are going to be the big play, and you've seen all kinds of estimates from 24 to 30-some million tons a year. That makes sense to me. But I think you are going to see some wheat, some corn, some DDGs, some ethanol, a lot of pork. You're going to see a nice pickup in chicken exports. And the thing people are overlooking, part of that figure is also the food grade items, the almonds and things like that are fairly high dollar, and China was buying a lot of prior to the trade war. So it's not all going to be met by corn, beans, wheat, cattle, and hogs. It's going to be a mixture of different products.
Real quick before the break here in about 30 seconds, I talked about the stock market. It's been on fire, and it's not really an ag-related topic, but anybody who'd like to retire someday is probably paying attention. What do you think is driving that thing, and how is this deal just so phenomenally strong?
Well, we're doing all the right things. You're forcing some manufacturing back here, grudgingly, admittedly. You've got full employment. You've got a little bit of uptick in wage prices, some of it mandatory, some of it just due to scarcity of workers. You've got technical support. You've got every time we drop to the 18-month moving average, we buy it. The two exceptions since 2012 where it was bought at the 40-day average. So the technicians are buying the dips. Fundamentally, it looks pretty strong yet. Yes, we're going to get overbought somewhere here, but we've done a lot of things right on the economic side over the last 4 years.
Very good. Stock market rocking and rolling. That's Alan Brugler from Brugler Marketing. Joe V, Standard Grain, filling in for Chip here on a Friday on AgriTalk. We will be back after the break.
Farming, getting things done early has a way of setting you up for success. Like using Corvus for an early season win over weeds. Corvus keeps even the toughest weeds from gaining a foothold. Multiple sites of action deliver superior control of emerged weeds. And later, Corvus reactivates with just a half inch of rain to take out any new weeds that may have sprouted. So get an early season win against weeds with Corvus for end of season rewards. Always read and follow label instructions. Corvus is a restricted use pesticide.
No matter what you do, you're always raising the bar, trying to do better than ever. Dalaro fungicide for corn and soybeans can help you get the edge you're looking for. Dalaro has a broader spectrum of disease control, and best-in-class dual-mode of action residual. Plus, it improves plant health, so your top-performing hybrids and varieties will have the protection they need to help you achieve your personal best yields. Dallaro from Bayer. Keep raising the bar. Always read and follow label instructions.
It's time for Tech Talk here on AgriTalk. We've got Pro Farmer, Senior Market Economist Dan Bott here in the studios. Dan, which is the market move that matters the most today?
Hey, Joe, I'm looking at February crude oil futures today. The crude oil market has been trading between $50 and $60 per barrel for months. Moreover, it offered little indication it was set to break out to the upside before Christmas. That's exactly what we saw this week, with the most active February contract climbing to $61.40 at yesterday's close, which marked a seven-month high before setting back today. It's pretty clear that energy traders view the Phase 1 trade agreement between the U.S. and China as a harbinger of a stronger global economy and increased energy usage next year. Crude prices were higher last spring, but this week's move topped the downtrend begun late last year, so we may be looking at higher fuel prices in 2020. Merry Christmas.
Santa's sleigh does not run on unleaded, I believe. That is Dan Bott, Pro Farmer Senior Market Economist. Check out his work on profarmer.com.
Find it now at shopfarmjournal.com. Brand new to the shop is the best of tractor tales, as seen each week on U.S. Farm Report. This two DVD set features dozens of classic machines and the collectors who bring them back to life. You'll get one DVD that's all green, the best of John Deere. The second DVD includes classics like Alice Chalmers and many more. Buy one DVD for $29.95 or buy the set for $49.95. Order today at shopfarmjournal.com or call toll free 877-847-9599. You can find it now at shopfarmjournal.com.
Five conferences, one location, something for your entire team. Get ready. The 2020 Top Producer Summit is set for January 27th through the 30th in Chicago. This year's summit is a combination of the five highly regarded top producer conferences: Top Producer Seminar, Executive Women in Agriculture, Tomorrow's Top Producer, Farm Journal Legacy Project, and, for the first time, the Farm Journal Hemp Summit. Register today for Top Producer Summit at tpsummit.com.
I'm Zach Johnson, a row crop farmer in Minnesota.
And I'm Mitchell Hora, a farmer in Iowa.
Agriculture has to feed a growing population, and many people want us to pull that off without messing up the environment. So how do we do that?
We're trying to figure that out on our podcast, Fieldwork. Check us out on the AgriTalk app and learn more at fieldworktalk.org.
Commodity Classic is unlike any other event in agriculture because it's created by farmers for farmers. Farmers determine the entire schedule, from the educational sessions to the trade show to the entertainment. Your experience is focused on the questions you have, the challenges you face. You'll walk away with answers, ideas, and a renewed energy about your operation, because farmers just like you have made sure you will. See your future clearly at Commodity Classic in San Antonio, February 27th through 29th. Visit commodityclassic.com.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
Welcome back to AgriTalk, everybody. Joe V, Standard Grain, filling in for the Chip Claus today. If you want to get a hold of us on Twitter, hashtag AgriTalk, tweet at me ding. At Standard Grain. And what? And what, Davis?
I was just saying ding.
What's that mean?
Usually there's a ding. I'm trying to hypnotize our audience to where whenever they hear AgriTalk, they hear a bell.
What's that going to do?
I don't know yet. Results are still being tabulated right now. But you certainly can hashtag your tweets, AgriTalk, ding.
All right, there you go.
Back to you.
Back to you. Do you have a quick market recap?
No, back to you. Would you like a quick market recap?
I guess.
Fine. March hard red futures 1.75 higher, 4.62 1/4. March soft red off 3 cents, 5.42 1/4. March corn futures were 1.25 higher, 3.87 3/4. May corn added a penny to 3.94. January bean futures 3.75 higher at 9.28 1/4. July beans added a half cent to 9.62 1/2. On your livestock side, Feb cattle futures 17.5 cents higher, 125.80. January feeders off 45 cents, 144.27.5. And February lean hogs fell 30 cents to 70.67.5. There's your quick market recap. Back to it, Joe.
Thank you, Davis.
You bet.
All right, Mr. Brugler, we're going to go down a little bit of a wormhole here with this China deal. I'm looking at the news that Davis mentioned earlier, which are these estimates from JCI regarding potential ag purchases. Let's talk about what's possible and maybe what's not. So soybeans, JCI says China could buy 34% above their previous record in terms of beans. Do you think that that's doable?
Well, only if they're going to stockpile a lot of them. And, of course, we have to allow for that possibility that they're just going to build up strategic reserves. There's been other people that have kind of floated the idea that they, in some of these commodities, they might buy them and then turn around and use them as foreign aid or otherwise mm-hmm. redistribute them to third countries. So, it's possible. It's more likely for 2021 or 2022 if we assume that they start to get their hog herd rebuilt.
How did now the footnote here, of course, is you know, the devil's in the details. They want the purchases to be favorable in terms of both quality and prices, meaning that I think this is what China said before. They don't want to buy non-competitive products. They want to buy whatever is competitively priced. So how do you get to a number like that while keeping U.S. prices competitive? Is that possible?
The answer is what's your ending stocks. Okay, if that buying doesn't keep drop your stocks usage ratio, right now we got 400 and some million ending stocks. As long as it stays above 250, you keep your average cash price below $10, and China's happy. I think JCI was actually throwing around a higher average cash price landed, like 11.25, but that backs up to 10 and low change here in the U.S. The point is, we're also expecting U.S. acreage and production to go back up in 2020. We don't expect the kind of prevent plant that we had last year. You've got people throwing around really bearish numbers for next year for beans just because of that production side of things. So there's room there for China to really ramp up the purchases and not drive the price that much higher. We all hope it goes higher. We'd like to see that cash average back at $9.50 or $10 or something. But again, that's where the rubber meets the road. Is if they're drawing exports out of the U.S., that's positive for U.S. prices. But if we're also expanding production, they could keep buying for quite a while.
Now, when they say competitive in regard to soybeans, I would imagine they mean competitive versus Brazil would be my guess. I mean, can we stay competitive versus Brazil on much larger volumes?
Again, if Brazil's got more and we've got more, somebody's selling some of it at below cost of production at some time during the growing season. And it's kind of like the wheat situation. Russia was selling below cost of production for several months this year. Then they wised up and tightened up the strings a little bit. Could the similar situation happens with the North America, South America?
You look at corn, JCI says they could do 8 million metric tons, which would be a record. They did 5.1 in 2012. China historically is pretty much self-sufficient in corn. I mean, I guess if they've got ethanol capacity, that this is doable. Is that right?
Yeah, and actually that's the 8 million is the WTO minimum. That's what they're supposed to be buying anyway.
From the U.S. or from everybody total?
That's market access. That's from everybody. But
okay.
But again, part of this game is you're trying to fix a trade deficit, so buy more of it from us, right?
Mm-hmm.
But no, that's the amount that they've basically been saying every year we're going to buy tariff free, and then they haven't been doing it because they assign the quotas to the state companies and then they don't execute. So. Ethanol is probably the key there for the short run. If they're using more corn to make ethanol, then they're not creating a burdensome supply domestically.
Now, ethanol actually was not even listed as one of the items in this sheet from JCI. Maybe that could be included under the others category. But what do you think is possible in terms of ethanol purchases?
I really haven't put a number to it yet. I think you could look back at the U.S. exports to China over the last two or three years. Even February and March of last year, you had a big surge in export shipments to China. They had a little window there where they were taking it. you take that volume and multiply it by 12, and that'd be kind of my minimum target. But keep in mind, they are expanding their E10 mandate to, rather than just 30 or 40 cities, it's supposed to cover the whole country. So over time, that's a lot of ethanol, even if not everybody drives a car over there.
You look at the African swine fever situation, and you would think that the proteins could be the biggest beneficiary here. I mean, not only pork, but beef. We know they're going to open up the poultry market again. Do you think do you think beef in particular is something that they could buy a lot more of?
My problem there is cultural. They're not used to buying a lot of beef because they just don't have a lot of beef. So you don't you're mainly talking about appealing to the younger urban consumers. You know, the kind of folks that are going to try new stuff. And that's a fairly substantial market. The hotel market certainly could use more than it has. That tends to be where a lot of the beef imports are going anyway. And but I think the main target in terms of volume is pork and poultry. And the Chinese have tried to ramp up their own poultry production, but they've basically have opened up a lot of their non-trade barriers, you know, the phytosanitary inspection type barriers, both to South America and the U.S. now, which tells me they want more poultry in there. That tends to be the cheaper meat for the working man over there, and then pork, because that's major. That's a major product for them. The problem with pork, I think, I haven't really been able to get anybody to pin this down, but I think part of the problem is refrigerated containers. Just being able to physically ship the stuff over there and get the containers back to fill them back up again. China's been gradually ramping up the shipments every week, but I think part of it is just how much can we get on a boat at one time, because it does have to be refrigerated.
Now, in the grander scheme of things, I mean, you know, we're going to see the text of this deal at some point in January, the way that it looks. But, you know, up to this point, China has not really indicated that they're going to agree to these big hard numbers in terms of purchases. And there really isn't much precedent for that either. I don't know that there's ever been a trade deal of this magnitude or any magnitude where there's been these like firm commitments to buy any sort of product. Are they really going to change their language here when we see the text of this agreement, do you think?
Well, my understanding is there are quantities in the agreement. The dollar volume China has not acknowledged, to the best of my knowledge.
That's what I mean.
You know, that's just a U.S. Swag based on this volume times this price, right? So, the other thing I would point out, and I saw this comment somewhere else, there was some speculation that they might shift some of their imports to Hong Kong to southern China ports like Shanghai.
Yes.
In order to be able to count them against this commitment, that would not reflect new business, right? But it would count, and the Chinese have played games with that on some of their soybean purchases, where okay, we're going to buy 10 million tons, but then they're counting stuff that was bought previous to the commitment as part of the commitment. So you know, again, that would be a way to get that meet whatever those dollar or volume figures are without buying quite that much product.
Now, China, I guess I can't help but be a little bit skeptical in regard to this whole thing, given that we've seen the optimism so many times over the last almost 2 years now, and then we've seen things go back the other way in every single instance. Just on a personal front, do you still have some skepticism here, or do you think that we're a lot closer to the real deal this time around?
Yeah. Well, it feels real this time, but
it does.
Yeah, I think we've got that the boy cried wolf syndrome. I think the market, that's why I don't think we're carrying a huge premium here. I think the market's been burned so many times on it that we're being a little cautious about going in whole hog on this thing. And hogs is probably a good example. They really haven't taken off on this news. The flip side of that is we have had enough short covering that if we get if the deal blows up, if it doesn't get signed, or somebody says, hey, on page 47, this gives them an out on half of the deal, that would definitely be bearish for the market, I think. You know, buy the rumor, sell the fact would be the issue there.
Very good. Alan, thank you so much for being on the show today. That is Alan Brugler from Brugler Marketing. Joe V filling in for Chip here on AgriTalk. We will be back with Davis after the break.
Hey, AgriTalk listeners, this is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady inviting you to get more insight on today's market movers with Pro Farmer. When you visit profarmer.com/radio, we'll give you 1 month of premium analysis and advice absolutely free. You'll get the perfect blend of the marketing and policy information you need for your farming operation without feeling overwhelmed. Plus, we'll text you when breaking market advice is issued so you never miss a marketing opportunity. Visit profarmer.com/radio today. That's profarmer.com/radio.
3, 2, 1. Oh no. Which button am I?
When every second counts, you can't wing it.
Guys, a little help up here?
In a home fire, you may have less than 2 minutes to get out. So make a family home fire escape plan. Then practice home fire drills at least twice a year so everyone knows what to do when they hear. Prepare your family at ready.gov/firedrill. Brought to you by FEMA, the Ag Council, and Make Safe Happen.
Commodity Classic is the place to renew your passion for agriculture.
This is my third time at the Commodity Classic. It is just such an exciting place. If you're in agriculture and you come down here and you don't get excited, you shouldn't be in agriculture. Every year I come home, I take something away. And every year I come home and I'm excited. I can't wait for spring to get here now.
See your future clearly at Commodity Classic in San Antonio, Texas, February 27th through 29th. Discover more at commodityclassic.com.
Hey, Jim, how would you describe our D.C. Signal to Noise podcast?
It's a dairy parlor analysis of the D.C. politics that impact America's farmers and ranchers.
Dairy parlor analysis? What do you mean?
No bull.
Download the D.C. Signal to Noise podcast with Jim Wiesmeyer and me, John Harith, every Friday on agweb.com, the AgriTalk app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Pivot BioProven is the first ever nitrogen-producing microbe that supplies nitrogen directly to the plant, helping maximize yield. Just ask Zach from Oklahoma.
The average was about a 5 to 6 bushel an acre benefit. Not only is that more money in my pocket, but it's less money I had to spend on fertilizer and wear and tear on my side dressing sprayer.
Pivot BioProven. Get what you paid for. The nitrogen that stays put, weather or not.
Sullivan Auctioneers is holding their annual year-end no-reserve dealer and farmer auction Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, December 19th, 20th, and 21st in Hamilton, Illinois. It all starts at 9 a.m. each day. This is one of the largest and highest quality auctions they've ever conducted, with over 50 combines, 60 tractors, planters, sprayers, tillage equipment, hay equipment, construction equipment, and much more. No on-site buyer's premium. Live internet bidding is available on all major items, and every item sells absolute with no reserve. Go to SullivanAuctioneers.com for a complete listing and sale order. Make plans to attend this auction now.
No matter what you do, you're always raising the bar, trying to do better than ever. Dalaro fungicide for corn and soybeans can help you get the edge you're looking for. Dalaro has a broader spectrum of disease control and best-in-class dual mode of action residual. Plus, it improves plant health, so your top-performing hybrids and varieties will have the protection they need to help you achieve your personal best yields. Dalaro from Bayer. Keep raising the bar. Always read and follow label instructions.
Soil needs plants to stay healthy, just like plants need soil to survive. Nature thrives on forming connections. Farmers thrive on forming them too. With Indigo Marketplace, we're setting out to connect every farmer with every buyer, making it easier to find a market for the things that make your farm unique. Visit indigoag.com/questions to find out more. Indigo. From questions, we grow.
Attention oxygen users. Are you on oxygen therapy and still using tanks? Life is hard enough struggling to breathe. Don't waste your breath on dealing with bulky, dangerous tanks.
Call 800-513-4698 now.
And try the Inogen 1 G4 Oxygen Concentrator risk-free for 30 days. Tanks are a hassle. They hamper mobility and are difficult to transport, not to mention risky. The Inogen 1 G4 Oxygen Concentrator is compact and makes its own oxygen, making your life easier. If you call right now, we'll send you a free information kit that outlines all the benefits. Plus, you can get a 30-day risk-free trial to see for yourself. But don't wait. This exclusive radio offer won't last. Call for your free information kit on the Inogen 1 G4 Oxygen Concentrator. Ditch the hassles of tanks and experience the freedom of living a mobile life again.
Call 800-513-4698. That's 800-513-4698. 800-513-4698.
When news breaks, the newsmakers talk about it on AgriTalk with Chip Flory.
Welcome back to AgriTalk, everybody. Joe B, Standard Grain, filling in for Chip. Lots of interesting talk about this China situation, and there still seems to be just a lot is up in the air, and you know about being up in the air, my tall friend.
I do. It's cold up here. Cold and lonely.
How cold is it in Iowa today?
You know what? I think we're right around 40 degrees, maybe 45. I walked up the street for a delicious burrito a little earlier, and it seemed fine. I had my coat. Yeah, 44 degrees. It feels like 39, though. So is that.
The burrito sounds good.
It was delicious. Yeah. I went with the steak on it today.
Oh, yeah. Beef. Good. It's what's
sometimes I go pork, sometimes I go steak. It's just kind of a matter of how I feel. You know, game time type decision there. It was delicious, though.
So we talked about this trade situation, and I think we're going to know, I would almost guarantee we'll know a lot more by early January. If Mnuchin says that this deal is going to be signed in early January, we'll see some text. I still, like Alan kind of said toward the end of it, I don't know if the trade's skeptical, but they're certainly acting cautiously, because your big fund traders, your money managers, the funds as they're known throughout the community, they're still very heavily short the soybean market, and that's the one market that, you know, would be the biggest beneficiary of this deal, you would think.
I would think so, yeah. And I don't know. You know, we have Bubba Todd Horowitz on. And he has this thing where once the news actually hits the news, it's already been traded. It's already in the rearview mirror. And so I guess if they're still short, apparently there's no news coming.
We call that a buy the rumor, sell the fact type situation where they've already priced it. But I don't know that they've priced it in beans. I mean, do the funds really want to be short? If those numbers from JCI are correct, and I have a lot of trouble believing that they are, and China's going to buy 134% of their previous record in a calendar year, beans are too cheap, and I wouldn't want to be short if I was a money manager. So
exactly, yeah.
I just don't know that the trade is 100% sold on this thing, and the soybean market seems to be probably the best indication of that. I mean, the rest of this stuff, like corn, I mean, we're not talking game-changing amounts of corn here, I don't think. Right. Same thing with wheat. Product like sorghum or DDGs could be a big deal. The pork is certainly going to be a big deal, I think. But I don't know. I'll believe it when I see it. I hope that my skepticism is not warranted, and I hope that they buy all the beans they can handle.
Attaboy. Yeah. Hey, can I throw something in here? You know, normally our listeners get the Friday Farm Fuels and Fertilizer Report about this time. We're having some, I don't know what happened. My price calculator or whatever that makes the numbers.
Your widget.
That we collect, my widget.
Dave has bent his widget.
Apparently it took Christmas vacation off a little early. It's not working very well this week. I do have a couple of items, though.
Go for it.
Have we got time? Can I just throw them in real quick?
See, I don't think he should get the song if he doesn't really have
it. Yeah, I don't know if I feel right about doing the full intro, but you can play the... Oh, wow.
No, that's it. Just keep it there. He only gets half. That's it.
Look how you just wielded power there from the host's chair. That's
awesome,
Joe.
Turn it off. Doesn't deserve it.
Okay, two things. Number one, interesting comments from Dan Vaught about the crude oil market, about what that might mean for fuels going forward, because we, you know, year after year, typically see farm diesel prices go down right around Christmas, right around this time here. We were steady last week and steady the week before. This week, like I said, I don't have numbers that I trust right now. So I'm not going to speculate either way on where we're at this week. I would guess somewhere within, you know, 1 to 2 cents regionally of steady, either above or below. But if everybody gets this big idea that the world economy is going to improve and that sends crude oil futures through the roof, well, heck, I mean, we've always talked about watching the front month heating oil contract as an indication of what farm diesel prices are going to do. And we talk about the key $2 area. Well, here we are at 201 and three quarters in the January contract heating oil futures. The February crude oil at 60.31, actually down 87 cents today. So there's definitely some strength over in the petroleum markets, something to keep a close eye on. I would say, you know, if you're thinking that you're going to make a play on diesel ahead of the first of the year, if you have reasons to do that, I certainly wouldn't discourage you from doing that. But get in touch with your preferred retailer, your supplier, and maybe, like, if you can, get a hold of a couple others, too. I mean, I don't want you to get caught in this mode where there's, like, just one guy for you. I understand customer loyalty and all that sort of stuff. But you got to take some power in that relationship and look around and find the best deal. The other thing I wanted to mention is phosphate. This from Mosaic Co., North America's giant phosphate producer. They're going to cut production. I'm looking through here. A third consecutive disappointing application season in North America has led to continuing high inventories and price weakness. That's a quote from Mosaic Co. Chief Executive Officer Jacques O'Rourke. Company plans to cut phosphate production at its Central Florida facilities by 150,000 tons per month and has already reduced it by 500,000 tons in the first half of the year. So just as phosphates begin to price themselves, you know, where we feel like we can afford them, here comes the North American production industry playing a little prevent defense. Keep an eye on phosphate. Collect some bids on diesel. Joe.
You know, I told Davis that the lack of the farm and fertilizer fuels report was unacceptable. And you know what he told me? He told me to cram it up my hole.
I did.
Radio edit.
The co-host is back-talking me. He's like my four-year-old.
I have an incredibly enlarged sass gland. I'm going to get it removed.
Sassing me over here. Do we got time for a tweet of the day?
We do. Today's tweets are brought to you by Moments in Time. Those shining moments can be far between and far too short, so savor the moments when you know what's going on. At White Wheat Tweet, each and every pear is ripe for precisely one day. At Asenbremer Kurt, so I was at Denny's for dinner tonight. The waitress asked me for my AARP card. I was like, what the?
Radio edit.
I'm not even 40 yet. Joe, thank you for stepping in, taking over the show. We really appreciate your efforts. The fans love you. Have a great weekend.
You got it, buddy. I'll be back next Friday. See you guys later.
Mr. Chairman, as a corn root, I speak for millions of my kind who can't be here to defend themselves. Pests are stalking our stocks and undermining our roots. But we can elect to protect with a legacy of strength. Poncho Votivo 2.0 seed treatment system increases nearby microbial activity to help us grow stronger. That's smart. Ladies and gentlemen, please, this is a corn roots movement. Ask your BASF seed advisor about Poncho Votivo 2.0 seed treatment. Always read and follow label directions.
Sullivan Auctioneers is holding their annual year-end no-reserve dealer and farmer auction Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, December 19th, 20th, and 21st in Hamilton, Illinois. It all starts at 9 a.m. each day. This is one of the largest and highest quality auctions they've ever conducted, with over 50 combines, 60 tractors, planters, sprayers, tillage equipment, hay equipment, construction equipment, and much more. No on-site buyer's premium. Live internet bidding is available on all major items, and every item sells absolute with no reserve. Go to SullivanAuctioneers.com for a complete listing and sale order. Make plans
Thanks
to attend this auction.
For sponsoring this AgriTalk podcast. For more news on Syngenta and the trends driving the industry, head to syngentathrive.com.